This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Politics is in many ways a war of information. Candidates and their supporters use every means available to convince us they're right and the other side is wrong. And in this digital age, you'd think it should be pretty easy to sort out various claims as true, false, exaggeration, or just out-and-out rumor. There are so many ways to check facts and verify sources, but it turns out that rumors persist even after they've been checked and double-checked, denied, rebutted, refuted, laughed off, and dismissed. So why do we believe them in the first place? Why do we continue to believe them after repeated denials? We'll also talk about the roles rumors play in politics. Later in the program, unlimited nachos, pretzels, and soda, the heart of darkness in baseball's bleacher seats. And first, though, rumors. If you've been the subject of a rumor, if you've ever spread one, give us a call and tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our first guest confronts rumors for a living. Bill Adair is the editor of PolitiFact.com, a project of the St. Petersburg Times and the Congressional Quarterly, which helps people figure out what's true and what's not true in politics. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you for having me. I guess business is good because there's a lot of rumors out there.
Well, let's begin with the one we played a tape of at the beginning of the broadcast, the rumor that Barack Obama is a Muslim. And interestingly, is that been able to be tracked down?
I don't know that we've ever found the ultimate source of it because it's now become so pervasive in so many different places. Primarily, and this is, I think, going to be one of the really important stories about the 2008 campaign, it's being spread by chain emails that are a real new form of communication where, you know, in the old days, a rumor would be passed over the back fence or at the bar or at the coffee shop by one person whispering into somebody else's ear. And now, thanks to email, they can be spread instantly to millions of people, and there's little opportunity to check them out.
And they keep reverberating. Even if somebody comes out and says, no, that isn't true, the denial does not get attached to that email, which continues to bound around the Internet.
No, it doesn't. And the denial does not get attached. And I think this is a really important aspect of this. The way that we get these emails, they come from our friend Bob, you know, and it shows up in our inbox as a message from Bob. And even though we know consciously that it's something that he's just passing along, I think it has some more credibility. I know Bob. Bob's a nice guy. He wouldn't pass along something that wasn't true. And so these things get spread and spread and spread. And as a result, you know, there was a poll a couple of weeks ago. The number of Americans who believe Obama is a Muslim has gone up despite all the things that we've written on PolitiFact.com and that other news organizations have done. The number's gone up. It was 8% back in November. The latest poll, it's up to 13% of the people wrongly believe that Obama's a Muslim.
And is there any way, you put the facts out on your website, lots of newspapers do too, broadcast outlets, everybody tries to correct the record. Is there any way to put a stop to rumors?
Well, I don't think we can, and I think that's just human nature. I think that information is power, and we want to pass on information that we have, and most of the time it's true, and a lot of time it's not. What's different this time is that it is spread so fast that the filters that might correct wrong information in the past aren't able to correct it quickly enough now. And so you have these misconceptions that spread rapidly before someone independent can get in and check it out and say, man, that's just not true.
The lead story on your website right now is about a chain email about taxes. What does that email say? Does this rise to the level of rumor?
I wouldn't call this a rumor, but these are the kind of things that we feel we need to check in this new climate. And so we've put a lot of emphasis when we do things for PolitiFact on checking these chain emails. We have our own email account that we set up just so that our readers can send us ones like these. The one you're referring to has to do with something that looks very believable. It's an email that shows what the tax rates would be for various kinds of taxes, income tax, the capital gains tax, under Clinton, under Obama, and under McCain. And you look at it, and it looks very authoritative. And so I think many people who've gotten this email probably think, oh, okay, so this is a serious analysis of what their tax plans would do. Well, we checked it out and found that the numbers are largely wrong and that they make some assumptions that are inaccurate, that are incorrect, and then draw conclusions that are just false. And so we use on PolitiFact, we use a truthometer to rate these things, and we gave one of the claims a false and the other two a barely true, which is our second lowest rating. So it's really a reader beware situation with all of these chain emails. Although they often have a germ of truth, they're largely wrong. And yet, you know, as those poll numbers indicate, people believe them.
Mm-hmm. In your experience, do you think that most of these rumors start as intentional disinformation, to go back and use a Cold War word?
We've traced a few back to the origin. I did one where I looked at a claim that was made that Senator Clinton refused to meet with Gold Star mothers, the mothers of soldiers killed in combat, and actually traced it back to the original incident where two women from the Gold Star Mothers group went to Senator Clinton's office and she wasn't there and they weren't able to meet with her. There was a germ of truth to that. That became an article on a conservative website, and I think the author of that believed he was writing a column rather than a news story, but he believed he was accurately recounting what happened. He stated some things that weren't true. That got exaggerated in chain emails that were written by other unidentified people. And before you know it, you just have a complete falsehood. Hillary Clinton refused to meet with the Gold Star mothers. Well, that's not true. So I don't think it's part of a grand strategy, but I think that a germ of truth, a modest distortion, gets exaggerated in the telling. You know, whereas that old story of, you know, you whisper in 10 people's ear and the story's distorted by the end, the same thing happens with email, that by the time you finally get that email, the truth has been twisted and exaggerated many times.
We're talking with Bill Adair, the editor of PolitiFact.com, about rumors, why we believe them, why we continue to believe them, even after they've been debunked. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email is talk@npr.org. Individual emails, please. No chain ones. Let's talk with Lisa. Lisa's calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Good morning or good afternoon. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. This is important. And I wonder if the past 10 years, I guess ever since the previous administrations, I did not have sex with that woman, and through the current administration's denials, even when maybe the facts aren't there, we have become inured to denials. Today's not guilties in the case of the Detroit mayor, I'm sure that a great many people kind of roll their eyes and think, well, of course he has to say it's not true. Has the denial become part of our cynical inability to dismiss rumors? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Oh, that's an interesting question, Lisa. Thank you for that. Is the denial a background, a cryptic way of saying, I'm guilty?
That's a great question. I think we are definitely more cynical about things that we hear from elected officials. And that may explain to some extent why even when the news media checks these things out, people still believe it. I still hope, though, that in this chaotic information age, that people will seek out reliable sources of information and trust them when they do the extra work and vet these things. It's surprising to me that people will just accept what they read in an email, and you know, well-educated, smart people will get these emails and think that it's true. I've had people come up to me in an office and say, hey, so I guess Obama is a Muslim? And so these things really persist, and maybe, as Lisa points out, maybe that's a reason. Maybe we have become so cynical.
Let's talk with Arnold, and Arnold's calling us from Columbia in South Carolina.
Yes. Several years ago, Procter & Gamble was the victim of a concerted campaign to spread the false rumor that they were linked with Satanist organizations, that profits of Procter & Gamble were going to satanic churches.
Images of suns and stars on the packages, that sort of thing.
Hello?
Images of suns and stars on the package, that sort
exactly,
of thing.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And Procter & Gamble put out reliable information on what the origin of their logo was, and they let it be known that they would sue anybody who persisted in spreading these rumors, and they followed through on the threat. And it's been at least 5 years since I've seen one of those emails about Procter & Gamble, so I think their tactic worked.
And yet they did withdraw that symbol from their products, as I recall.
So they did.
I saw that as something of a surrender, you know, that it was like,
really?
Okay, we give up.
All right, okay. Arnold, thanks very much. Let's see if we can go quickly to Michael. Michael with us from Eureka in California.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, yes, I wanted to ask your guest what he thought the effect of talk radio was on proliferating the persistence of these rumors.
Originating and proliferating. All right, thanks very much, Bill. Michael, excuse me.
You know, that's a good question. I don't think we know the answer to that because I don't know that anyone has done any sort of tracking of how much talk radio has pushed these things. I guess the perception is to the extent they become partisan and that talk radio is partisan often, that many more talk radio stations are conservative. I guess you could say maybe that's pushing it, but I don't think we know enough to know the answer.
And do you expect this to be the busiest season ever for rumors?
Absolutely. I just think with chain emails and blogs and YouTube videos and assorted other things that we probably haven't even thought of yet, between now and November, people are just getting information from many new sources, and they're not sources where things have been checked out. And so that's, you know, that's why we're doing what we're doing with PolitiFact, is the whole idea of just helping voters sort it all out and figure out what's true and what's not.
Bill Adair, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Bill Adair, the editor of PolitiFact.com and the Washington Bureau Chief of the St. Petersburg Times, with us today from the studios of the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida. Coming up, we're going to continue this conversation about rumors. Did you hear the one about the razor blades and the apples? Why debunking rumors often doesn't work, indeed may be counterproductive. 800-989-8255. If you've ever started a rumor or been the victim of one, email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Rumor, as they say, is the one thing that gets thicker as it's spread. We're looking at how rumors, even with ones with no basis, in fact, get spread and believed. And we want to hear from you. Don't start any rumors, please. But if you've ever been the subject of one, if you've ever spread a rumor, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ira's on the air. Ira's calling us from Conway in Arkansas.
Hi. Hi, Neil. How's it going?
Good.
I go to a really small liberal arts school, and the rumor mill here at Hendricks College is extremely powerful. And there was one about me, and so I decided that it was completely false. So I decided to do an experiment. So a couple years ago, one night I went around and told a bunch of people in my dorm that a friend of mine's father was Bob Saget, and it spread like wildfire. And by the next day, by the next morning, I was sitting at the cafeteria at lunch, and people were saying all kinds of permutations of it with weird specifics, like Bob Saget was all around campus in disguise, and anyway, it was absolutely amazing. And it even came to the point where an RA came up to me and told me that that I should probably, you know, give her privacy.
Oh, because she's the oppressed daughter of a famous television star?
Yeah, exactly.
So the idea...
I even had trouble getting rid of the rumor after it started.
Even after you admitted you'd started it as some sort of as a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Bob Saget's daughter, is she going to give a lot of money to the school?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Ira, thanks very much.
Thanks a bunch.
Farhad Manju looked into why it's so difficult to stop a rumor and wrote about it in the New York Times early this month. He has a new book out called True Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. He joins us now from a studio at member station KQED in San Francisco. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks. Hi, Neil.
And part of what your article wrote about was a counterintuitive point, which is that the more often a rumor is debunked, the more most people believe it. How come?
Yeah, I mean, there have actually been psychological studies on this. And it turns out that one of the ways we judge what's true and what's not in the world is we look to social consensus. We look to what other people think. And if we hear something from someone, and if we hear a fact repeatedly, we tend to think that that's true, even if we hear it in the context of it being debunked. If someone tells you that a certain health warning or something is false, after several days, you might forget the what psychologists call the negation tag, the tag that says that it was false, and instead you just remember the fact vaguely. And the fact that you remember that, the sort of familiarity you have with that idea increases your chance of sort of thinking that that's probably true. In one study they did, they gave senior citizens a list of health warnings, things like whether corn chips are good for you and whether aspirin causes erosion of your tooth enamel and things like that. They told them which ones were true and which ones were false. And for some of these, they repeated them three times. And 3 days later, they asked them they gave them a quiz on what was true and what was false. And the senior citizens, it turned out to remember many of the false ideas as true, especially the ones that had been repeated many times. The more something was repeated, if the researchers told them that a specific health claim was false three times, a few days later, they remembered that they were more likely to remember those claims as true.
And it's fascinating. Joseph Goebbels, the famous Nazi propaganda chief, said, you know, repeat a big lie often enough and people will believe it. And I guess everybody was disturbed at that. It is even more disturbing to deny the big lie often enough and people will believe it even more.
Right. It's a pretty big problem if you're trying to confront a rumor. And this is something that you were talking about, the rumor concerning Obama being a Muslim. And that's something that he had to face in that. I mean, the more sort of prominence he gives it in, and he did, in stump speeches, he started mentioning it. There was an email campaign that the campaign put out about that rumor. And one of the risks they faced was, in repeating it to debunk it, they might actually increase its prominence. And your earlier guest, Bill Adair, noted that the number of people who believe that Obama is actually a Muslim has increased over the last few months. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why.
So is there any way, do you think, sites like PolitiFact and Snopes.com and other, people who try to find out the truth about things, is there any effective way to counter a rumor?
Well, it's interesting because we live in this time where there are sites like PolitiFact and Snopes. There are these sites on the internet that you can very easily find find out the veracity of certain claims. While at the same time, there are many more sources for that are pushing false information. So you have this kind of war online. If you go on the internet, for example, to search for, if someone tells you, hey, you know, I heard that what happened with 9/11 is not what you actually think, and actually a plane didn't hit the Pentagon that morning, which is a prominent conspiracy theory. If you go on the internet and search for that, search for like Pentagon 9/11, some of the first results you'll find in Google have to do with the conspiracy theories and pushing those conspiracy theories rather than, the more objective facts about what happened there. And it depends on the rumor, of course, and it depends on the specific claim. But we often find this kind of war between what's true and what's false on the internet. And it's a competition, I guess, between the forces of good and the forces of who believe in other things. I discuss this as kind of people are now much more able to invest themselves in kind of competing realities. You have some people who believe that global warming science is false and some people who believe it's true. And online, you can find experts, in quotes, who believe both those things and who will push their sort of ideas for each of those things. And you can kind of believe that and not be confronted with, contrary opinions.
Joining us now is Patricia Turner, a professor of African American Studies at the University of California at Davis. She's with us today from an office on her campus. Thanks very much for being with us today.
It's nice to be here.
And why are we so quick to believe rumors and so difficult to disbelieve them?
Well, a lot of that depends. There aren't any of us who believe all of the rumors, but rumors that hit areas in which we're vulnerable for belief, we accept. So if you are a parent of a young child and someone tells you you shouldn't let your child eat an apple that they got from trick-or-treating because somebody the next town over put razor blades in the apples and the kid had to be rushed to the hospital, that's the kind of text that will really appeal to a parent, someone who wants to protect their children from danger. Other people will hear that and go, how in the world would you disguise a razor blade in an apple? That's not very plausible.
How would you get it in there without cutting your finger off?
Exactly. And so the rumors that people tend to believe tell us a little bit about them and what their concerns are, who they think has power in the world, who they think doesn't have power. In the case of the text you've been talking about with Barack Obama, perhaps who they think shouldn't have power.
Here's an email that we got from Roberta in Gig Harbor, Washington. The power of these emails is that they play on readers' fears and prejudices, just what you were saying, Patricia Turner. Reading that Obama went to school in a madrasa and Canadian health care leaves people waiting for years for surgery play into the unease we feel. I have more than once taken the time to debunk forwarded emails, mostly because these are sent to me by family members. I urge them to think before they forward, but I have little confidence that more than one or two people have read my corrections. It's just easier for them to see something in writing that confirms things they've heard on cable news or around the office.
That's right, because they're predisposed to believe them in the first place. So what happens when they may have an uneasiness that they don't want to articulate about Barack Obama's candidacy, a discomfort with perhaps having a person of color there. And they may not like that about themselves, or else they just know that it's politically incorrect to say that. And they get an email giving them what they think of as a credible reason for discounting his candidacy, and they forward that and they become a part of the process.
Is the grain of truth important that Barack Obama's middle name is Hussein? His father was a Muslim.
Yeah, that's a pretty dubious kernel of truth, but lots of people have names like, I don't think that people name their children Adolf any longer.
No, I don't think
so. Association with Hitler. But often there is an underlying truth. Barack Obama did have, by many standards, an unconventional religious upbringing because of living in Indonesia, living in Hawaii, a mother who very much liked to take him around to different churches and see different cultures. That's a little bit unorthodox for some people. How that then permutates to he's a Muslim, for some people, that's not a big step.
Here's another email. We got this from Beth in Modesto, California. I received the slow dance chain email for the 10th time from a well-meaning friend, and I didn't know what that was. I inquired. It's apparently about a chain email passing a song supposedly written by a dying young girl. Turns out not to be true. Anyway, friends kind of snapped because I was sick of receiving it, so I copied it and pasted the debunk from Snopes.com to every single person in the email history. Several people were actually angry with me. I guess they'd rather believe the lie. And Farhad Manjoo, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out this happens often. You see this often where people will pass on the Snopes thing and people will get upset because they really wanted those ideas that they saw in the email to be true. I mean, the reason they passed it on was because they felt it was important. And they felt it was important because, as your other guest says, it resonates with things they already believe in. This is one of the kind of hallmarks of our age that we are now, because there are so many more sources of information out there, we're more likely to see information that kind of accords with what we already think. But we can also find other people online, groups and, on social networks and things like this who actually believe these things. And so if someone passes you some debunking information, you're not readily going to accept that. I mean, one of the things we see often is that in these chain emails, if Snopes, for example, debunks something, the Obama Muslim email has had this, the little people might start incorporating the Snopes debunk in the chain email. So now some versions of the Obama email say, I checked this out on Snopes, and it turns out it's true. This is a way to sort of dissuade people from actually checking it out.
You know, Neil, prior to the Internet, people used to authenticate these things by saying, I know it's true, I saw it on 60 Minutes, or I know it's true, it was on Oprah. And then when those disclaimers got incorporated into the text, people would say, I had people tell me that they got to Oprah in order to refute the fact that a rumor that they believed about designer clothing had been outed on the Oprah show.
Patricia Turner of the University of California at Davis, also with us, Farhad Manju, author of True Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. We're talking about rumors. It's the talk of the nation from NPR News. And David's with us. Davis on the line from Lafayette in Georgia. David, you there? David, I guess David has left us. Let's see if we can go now instead to, this is Sana. Sana with us from Buffalo, New York.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me.
Go ahead, please.
I just had a question about when rumors do come out about public officials or about countries or religion, is it better for those people who the rumor is about, is it better for them to just let it be and not address it because addressing it gives it credibility and that can, in fact, increase the rumor of sorts?
Patricia Turner, what do you think?
They're really in a difficult position because I agree with the evidence and have found it in my own research that the repetition actually will increase the number of people who believe. But we've got to have faith in those members of our population who, when they're given a clear-cut explanation and evidence, will accept it. So, you know, if Barack Obama were to have left this alone, the whole journalistic community would be saying, you know, aha, look, he won't deny it. So then he's in trouble for not denying it. So stating very clearly what the facts of the case are in as few words as possible and repeating that over and over again will get to the people who will be inclined to be persuaded by evidence.
Sure. Yeah, and
go ahead, Farhad.
Well, I think your other guest is right, and I think that one of the things we have to wonder about is if Obama hadn't addressed this, it probably would have spun out more out of control. And some experts have praised Obama for the way he handled this. Specifically, he went on a Christian broadcasting network a few months ago and addressed this head on, and that was that got good marks because he was speaking to the audience sort of most likely to believe these things and most likely to consider them damaging. And so he went right to sort of the preferred group and he did confront them head on and stated the facts, repeated the facts rather than repeating the rumor.
And as we heard earlier from Bill Adair, the number of people who believe that rumor has since gone from 8% to 13%. So,
and will increase after your program.
Sana, thanks very much for the phone call. Let's see if we can get one last caller in, and this is Jesse. Jesse with us in California.
Hi. I received a mass email containing ridiculous rumors about Barack Obama, and it upset me on many levels, but an interesting thing was that the person who sent it to me wrote, "Even if it is not true, do you really want to take a chance?" And a few months ago, I heard on the radio a woman say that she was going to vote for Barack Obama until she heard the comments. And then she said that it doesn't matter if it's true or not. It scared her so much she couldn't vote for him anymore. So why doesn't it matter whether it's true? So I was thinking maybe that people feel that a rumor, even if it is false, must have been started because of something bad. And therefore, the rumor itself doesn't matter, but they believe that there must be something bad about the person to deserve the comments being made.
Ah, Patricia Turner, you study rumors. What do you think?
I think that she's right. And one of the things that I find in my interviews with people when they talk about a belief that they find credible is if I can present them with evidence to the contrary, their response will be, well, it's the kind of thing they would do if they could. With conspiracy theories, you always get this notion that there's something negative about this in the first place. And so I think that the caller's friend who was prepared to vote for Obama, that's a little bit less likely. Usually it's individuals who already are predisposed to dislike the product, if it's a product, or the industry, if it's an industry, or the political party, or the individual, and the rumor just reinforces that. I don't think you would find many of the people with Barack Obama bumper stickers and T-shirts and all of the people who've become a part of this campaign who were ever swayed by the rumor.
Patricia Turner, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Patricia Turner is professor of African American Studies at the University of California at Davis, where, among other things, she studies how rumors spread. And our thanks to our caller, Jesse in California. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And Farhad Manju, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Farhad Manju's book is True Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. This is NPR News.